Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Shit Show with J-Bo. In this episode, I got to interview Bobby Weirdo. Bobby Weirdo is the founder of Weirdo Music Forever. It's a Los Angeles-based website dedicated to some amazing bands and artists. Those bands slash artists include Ariel Pink, RCTV Moore, John Mouse, Gary Wilson, and a whole slew, a whole world of other wonderful art and music. You really got to check out Weirdo Music Forever. His Twitter page has turned me on to so many cool acts. You'll hear all about him. One more thing, I wanted to thank the band Holy Shit for allowing us to use their music throughout this podcast. So what you're hearing right now is in fact Holy Shit. It's off their 2017 record Solid Rain. Later you'll hear some more, and then at the very end. So listen to this whole thing. Sit back. This is Bobby Weirdo of Weirdo Music Forever. This is The Shit Show with J-Bo, and we'll talk soon. Here's my theme song.
This is Bobby Weirdo, and I am one of the people or entities behind Weirdo Music Forever, and you might find that online or out and about at shows or Instagram or any of these kind of places.
What is your philosophy behind Weirdo Music Forever, Bobby?
The philosophy, if I'm going to give a short version, is...
Give a long version, man.
I'll give all kinds of versions. It's basically really just coming from the angle of celebrating something that should be celebrated. And I think that there are temptations, especially in today's world, to focus on everything we don't like, and that's what, if we look at social media or we look at our conversations with friends or coworkers or at school or wherever we are, we find, I think, the conversation more and more leaning toward that which we don't like. But this Weirdo Music Forever, Bobby Weirdo's philosophy, to focus on what Bobby Weirdo likes and what he wants to share and what Weirdo Music Forever wants to share. And so I think that's what it's about. And of course, there's loose genres of music or styles or aesthetic choices or worlds that are a strong part of that. But broadly speaking, that's the philosophy.
Don't you love that, how you started this collective? It's not unlike how I've kind of always approached my show that we're on right now. It used to be in Seattle. I would do a weekly show. My whole thing was free form, you know, and I did exactly what I wanted to do, and I talked and dealt with exactly what I liked. So it worked every time. I mean, most times, you know, like where it was always just a great time. It was always really nice. Like, I'm really interested in you because, you know, I would type about, or I'd tweet about some of my favorite artists, you know, Ariel Pink, and because of you kind of picking up John Mouse and branching out a little bit more, Gary Wilson and things like that. The ease and the humor and the rebelliousness of Weirdo Music Forever and that the type of music that they talk about is a total revolution as far as I'm concerned. The way these people operate, with very little equipment sometimes, it's all about inventiveness. It's really innocent and unbelievable music, and it needs to be massive, I think. But I don't know, maybe that would ruin it.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I don't think there's any... I don't think there's any fear that it'll get so big that it suddenly becomes not fun or cool or important. I think there are always forces out there that are just so big that that's not an issue. And that's fine. But I do enjoy we are fortunate to have possibilities with blogs and social media and these kind of things, at least so far so good, where the constraints aren't there. There's nobody paying Weirdo Music forever. There's no agenda. It truly is a self-funded labor of love of saying, this interview does not have to fit in X amount of pages. It does not need to get X amount of clicks or likes or shares. There's no pressure. The only desire is to share things that truly, according to the beliefs of Weirdo Music Forever, are things that make the world a better place. And it can stay there. I don't think that it's, I've heard people describe some of these kind of things as a fan site or, you know, using the word fan. That's obviously an element of it. But more importantly, I think it's just being just one more, just little platform, one gathering place for people to find this and to talk about it and to share it. And hopefully there's no real definite ending to that, either on the timeline or size-wise or anything. It's hopefully a cooperative effort that expands in unexpected directions and can be around a long time, and who knows how or where and when it will grow.
Now, does Bobby Weirdo make music himself?
Bobby Weirdo knows a lot of people who make music in different ways, and Bobby Weirdo certainly is tied in with all that, but when we're talking about Bobby Weirdo, Bobby Weirdo does not identify as someone who makes music, no.
Got you. Now, does Bobby Weirdo live in Los Angeles? I'm guessing, but I don't know for sure.
Bobby Weirdo kind of gets all around, but obviously Southern California is the hub of the activity. A lot of stuff goes down in L.A., and a lot of stuff, well, not as much stuff, but there's plenty that goes down in San Diego. That's where our friend Gary Wilson is based, among others. And then trips out to the deserts and these kind of things as well. So Southern California, it is very Southern California-centric in that sense, in that Ariel Pink, Charles, Gary Wilson, these people are around this area. And someone like John Mouse definitely has put in time here through CalArts and colleagues and friends and that kind of thing. And then there are people that have very little to do with the area except the friendships and the connections, like R. Stevie Moore. I am around Southern California, primarily Los Angeles and San Diego.
What's your opinion on the California burrito, man? I used to go to San Diego, and there was a little place called La Posta, and they served this amazing, like, I don't know, it was a burger with French fries. I'm sorry, a burrito with French fries in it. Do you dig on that at all?
Gosh, I am probably the wrong person to talk about burritos, other than to say if it's in Southern California, it's hard to go wrong. I am not reverent about that kind of thing. So if it tastes good, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. What was your experience with it?
Oh, it's just something that sticks out from my time in San Diego, that's all. And a band called The Donkeys. They're good friends of mine. I thought they were great. Have you ever heard of The Donkeys out of that city?
Well, Bobby Weirdo is actually friends with Jesse, who is no longer in The Donkeys, but was a big part of The Donkeys for sure.
Yeah, they are a great band.
I haven't checked them out lately, but I have all their old LPs, and especially a fan of the time when Jesse was in the band, and yeah, they're great.
Jesse Precious. Yeah, very cool dude. I stayed at his house once on tour. Whatever, it doesn't matter, but great band. I got to see them, I think a place called Coos Art Cafe I could be wrong, but I believe that's where it was, and I thought they were great. And we just then I saw out. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't the Donkees. It was the Moon and Sixpence, who became the Donkees. And then Extra Classic was formed from the singer of that band. So Extra Classic and the Donkees were formed from Moon and Sixpence. I saw them at Kuzar Cafe, hooked back up with them in Seattle, and whatever. Yeah, the Donkees are great anyway.
Very cool.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned a couple bands, or a couple artists, Charles DeCrema and John Miles. Now, Charles, she has a new record coming out. I got to hear a little tiny bit of it. I thought it was fantastic. Have you heard some of that? And what's your thoughts on her upcoming LP?
It's definitely one of the most, for me, anticipated records that'll be coming out. Hopefully, 2018. It's been on my mind a long time, and I'm just such a fan of just pretty much everything Charles does, and any iteration from video work to collaborative music endeavors to just straight up solo stuff. I love it all, so I'm really looking forward to Let's Start a Family Tonight.
Yeah, Let's Start a Family Tonight. That's going to be great. You also mentioned John Mouse, who, partially because of Weirdo Music Forever, I think you just kept talking about him. And I was like, well, I got to check out John Mouse. I mean, this was like, I don't know, 6-7 months ago. I was kind of late on it, but I got his Screen Memories record. And it took a little bit, you know, like all this Weirdo Music kind of tends to, you know, it doesn't hit you right at first. But when it does, they say it's like, you know, like Algebra was supposed to hit you and you got it all at once. That never happened with me, but that's what they say. That's how this stuff is. But the John Mouse record was fantastic. How is he connected to the Haunted Graffiti? Was it the Cal Arts thing? Has he done work with Haunted Graffiti? I was a little unclear on that. Do you know?
Well, he's definitely, he and Ariel have been roommates and done music together, and definitely were. I think there was a period where, and this isn't information that I have firsthand, this is all just culled from other sources, but there was definitely a period where they were playing music to each other, for each other, on a daily basis, is my understanding, and there's footage on YouTube and records of them collaborating, and that's when, to me, the story gets real interesting, where there's the, if you look at the intersections of an era where that you had Night Jewel and you had John Mouse and you had Ariel Pink and you had Matt Fishbeck and you had Geneva Jacuzzi and you had all of these great musicians that have done things. It just looks like one of those kind of graphs where all the circles are intersecting and they have this shared territory and then separate territory, but it's all kind of coming from the same source. So that's, the intersections of Ariel and John Mouse are always pretty amazing to me. And I heard rumors of, well, it's in the interview that Bobby did with John last year, that there could even be further collaborations down the road, recording-wise, which would be amazing.
That'd be unbelievable. I love Ariel Pink, and I love how he kind of, you know, borrows a little bit from other people. And I don't know, like, I heard John Mouse long after I listened to almost, you know, Ariel's probably his entire catalog that's available. And I was picking out of him, like, oh my God, like, Ariel got a little bit of this from this dude. And, yeah, just a lot of appreciation there. I was listening to The People Are Missing on the latest John Mouse record on the way to work. I drive like an hour and a half from here to harvest medical marijuana, like four times a week, although I stay down there. And I was just hit. I had Screen Memories and Dedicated to Bobby Jameson. Full fucking blast, you know? And, that song, The People Are Missing, just hit me. And it reminded me of like Devo mixed with, Joy Division or something. Do you find that, Joy Division seems to be a fairly big influence on John Mouse, at least on his, on Screen Memories, his latest record?
I don't know where he's coming from when he's thinking about that. I'd have to hear that from him.
Oh, I know, yeah.
but, I mean, what I do know is that both those albums you mentioned were just were and are so remarkable. And I think that 2017 in that sense will really go down as an important era when you look at just those two albums alone. Then, I mean, you also have Holy Shit, Solid Rain, and other albums that came out that were just incredible as well. But Holy Shit is a band. It's essentially, it has different members over the years, and Matt Fishbeck is at the center of it all, and Holy Shit opened for John Mouse on several dates on this last tour.
Mm-hmm.
They, Bombs Away, which is on Memories, is actually a Holy Shit song. And yes. And in so and
that's
then
a great fucking song, man.
It is a great song. I highly recommend Holy Shit and all the iterations. And of course, Ariel was in Holy Shit for a stint, and the album Stranded at Two Harbors is amazing. Chris Owens, who went on to do Girls later and now does Curls, was in Holy Shit. And they've just had, you know, this ongoing lineup of amazing talents. And Solid Rain is definitely something I recommend. And I think there's going to be even more happening with that album going forward into the next year.
Okay.
Who am I to tell you what you can and cannot lie about? I'm just a guy whose spit has run dry.
Out in a very limited kind of sense. I think there were 500 final copies pressed, and I think you can hear one side of it online, but digitally, but no videos. The last time I checked, no videos, no downloads, and that kind of thing, except for listening to that one side. So I think the last time that I spoke with Matt, there were plans for an expanded release to happen, which I hope does, because the band and Matt Fishbeck are just so talented.
Wow, okay. What is the reaction to, well, let's see, you said a few of them are local. Now, to me, you know, these people are a big deal. You know, Geneve Jacuzzi, Ariel Pink, Charles. And I know they draw a fairly big crowd across America. In L.A., how are these people regarded and received? You know, like, I've been around the world, and I was in Liverpool, and the Beatles were kind of, like, not looked at as that great or that cool. You know, Athens, Georgia didn't think R.E.M. was that cool. Seattle, for a long time, wouldn't talk about Cobain. How is a guy like Ariel Pink, how is he received in Los Angeles? Is it, you know, like Adam Carolla, even one of my favorite podcasters, said in L.A. he won't sell shit, but he'll go to, you know, Seattle and sell a ton. How is Ariel Pink and those people, how is that movement regarded in Los Angeles?
Now, not being a native of Los Angeles, I'm not totally qualified to answer. What I will say is that, as far as Ariel Pink goes, I think he has a real strong base in Los Angeles. And I know Charles, who's more authoritative on the subject than I am, has talked about possibly what it's like to be from L.A. and attitudes, yeah, and that kind of thing. So I can't speak to that in the same way, other than to say that I've definitely seen a strong support network for not only Ariel, but also John Mouse. And I will say that even though Gary Wilson lives in San Diego, I think the audience is better prepared in Los Angeles to experience the music and throw themselves into it. And possibly all of this is also helped by a better, larger network of, as small as it is, it's still better and larger network of DIY venues and just sheer size. Now, I don't know what that would be like. I do know online of fans in cities like Vienna and Lisbon and Madrid, mm-hmm, and
Stockholm and all these kind of places, I know through those kind of channels, online channels, people who are fans of the music, I don't know what it feels like to be at an Ariel Pink show in any of those cities and what that response is, especially if they haven't seen him or an artist like that play in several years. That would be neat to experience. And I saw John Mouse play at Coachella for the first weekend, not this one that just passed. And that was interesting because you're in the festival atmosphere and you're seeing people that may or may not have really sought this out. I suspect that most people knew what they were going to see, but certainly not everyone.
Yeah, how is John Mouse live? I've only seen footage. I tried to make his Philadelphia show, but I just couldn't go. It's about 4 hours from here. How is that dude live?
I think it's a must. Anyone that enjoys the music, there are some artists that you don't necessarily have that experience with. With John Mouse, I feel that it's part and parcel to the whole experience of his music, that the recordings are a half of the experience, and the live shows are half of the experience. I got to see him the day before he performed at Desert Days out in Joshua Tree, which was also amazing, but it was at a small club in San Diego called Soda Bar. And this was in the kind of early stages of the first leg of the tour that essentially hasn't stopped since the fall. Mm-hmm. And there were people there in San Diego that had come from the Bay Area. Somebody had come from Florida. It was a spot that people knew he was going to be performing and weren't able to get tickets closer to where they lived. And to see John Mouse and the band, who totally ably backs him and supports him in every way, in that setting, was really beyond just seeing music that you like performed live. It was its own experience that, if you're anyone, if the music of John Mouse speaks to anyone, that seeing that, experiencing that is really sort of without a parallel. It's a must experience if possible.
Now, John Mouse does he have a PhD in philosophy, or am I misquoting that?
I don't know the intricacies of the technical degree. I know he's his mentor is, if I have it right, is post-disciplinary, and I think that his studies at the doctoral level were more political science based, but it definitely has a lot of intersections, kind of a multidisciplinary approach, if not post-disciplinary. I've read the thesis or the dissertation, which I recommend for any John Mouse fan.
Yeah.
Communication and Control. And there's a whole chapter on music, which is interesting. And there's certainly things that you can kind of pick and choose depending on your interests and knowledge and all of that. I found the music one particularly interesting, and it was fun that examples were used by artists like Ariel Pink, Puro Instinct, and Franco Falsini. So I thought that was real interesting.
Awesome. Now, how did Gary Wilson, he's like an artist from the 70s at least. I don't think he goes back much further than that. How is he experiencing a renaissance? Has he just been around the entire time since he started? Or is there a catalyst, not unlike, you know, I don't know. I feel like Ariel Pink started talking about RCV more, at least that's where I heard about him. And all of a sudden brought him back. How did Gary Wilson, who is very cool, and I've definitely checked him out on YouTube quite a bit, how's he doing his thing? I mean, he's an older man, and he's been around since the 70s, right?
Yeah, well, a couple things. First, before I get to that, you know, I do definitely want to latch on to what you bring up about Ariel Pink and RCV Moore, that Ariel Pink, his importance of course, for his own work, that all stands on its own, and that would be enough. But I think his role really is as a center, a glue that holds this world together, I think more than anyone else, his street cred, his passion, his just genuine love for music, and then bringing music to the attention of others can't be understated. So, and that's been for, as you say, I think so many people have found Stevie's music through Ariel, but also Gary. Gary's opened for Ariel on several occasions. Ariel has played bass live with Gary and created artwork based around Gary, and so that's, you know, really.
So that's another one that Ariel kind of brought to the fore a little bit?
Definitely to some people. To get to your specific question, I think Gary's never stopped. He started putting out music in the mid-70s, and then he had the legendary You Think You Really Know Me album, which was known by very niche sort of people in the know back in the 70s. And then if you watch a documentary or you read things about him, you might get the impression that Gary just fell off into some abyss and was never heard from again. In actuality, he was working both with Gary Wilson and the Blind Dates and then also playing gigs in local San Diego bands, Big City Blues Band, Donnie Fennell, and he's able to play his way through the Great American Songbook. He's a skilled keyboard and piano player, and besides bass and guitar and drums and everything else, but he's never stopped playing music, and that's, you know, a lesson in and of itself. And one of the most inspiring things about Gary is he's just never stopped. And then there's been ups and downs and peaks and valleys as he's been going through this career. Definitely probably the first big boost he got as far as coming to international attention later was when there's somebody named Ross Harris, who he's the little boy in the Airplane movie in the cockpit with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he had grown up much later and was, I think at the time he was a photographer working with Beck during that, if I have it right, the Mellow Gold Odelay era. And my understanding is he passed Gary's music along to Beck, who first and foremost mentioned Gary and where it's at. By name. So that was a huge thing where people said, you know, who is this Gary Wilson? And then there's an interview on MTV where he's dropping all these Gary Wilson song titles, 6.4 and that kind of thing. And he did some Gary Wilson covers live. So that was sort of many renaissance moments for Gary when someone would bring him up. And since then, everything you mentioned with Ariel, Tyler, the Creator, has mentioned him in interviews. Earl Sweatshirt sampled him a couple years ago. Questlove from The Roots loves him. So all these kind of associations with artists of well-deserved notoriety and acclaim, that sort of attention has really helped him.
And I guess that's why I saw that he's on, I believe, Stone's Throw Records, which is a Peanut Butter Wolf, which is a hip-hop, partially a hip-hop label, so that's where that all ties in maybe a little bit.
Right, well, Peanut Butter Wolf is, you know, I should have included him in that group we just talked about. He's such an important curator, someone who is not afraid to venture outside of straight genre lines, and I think the Mary Had Brown Hair album is a highlight in Gary's career. A lot of people know Gary because of the song Gary's in the Park. And, that was the Peanut Butter Wolf intersection with Gary is is amazing, and they continue to cross paths, and Peanut Butter Wolf continues to support Gary Wilson, and as recently as this past year, or last year, he's been at Gary shows, and that's definitely a big part of the story.
I went to your, I was doing a little research for this talk we're having right now, and I went to your very informative Twitter account, and I learned all about that, you know, Peanut Butter Wolf, Stone's Throw, Gary Wilson, you know, it's so informative, your Twitter account. I don't know, I think it does such good for this community, and I wanted to commend you on the little sparkle symbols that you put on your Twitter post. To my knowledge, that's the first time I saw that. I'm like, that's Weirdo Music Forever's thing. And I was trying to think, what can I make my thing? It makes it stand off so nicely, man.
Thank you. Thank you very
much.
I
know it's silly and tiny, but I've actually thought about that. Like, it's really fucking cool, man. What was the, where'd you get that idea, man?
Good question. I can't tell you exactly. The emojis and that kind of thing are interesting because you've got a limited palette. You can only work with what's available, and things have become there's more to choose from now than perhaps there have been in months and years past as those kind of things expand. But I don't think it was a conscious decision, but I think it's always a good aesthetic decision to pick something, more or less stick with it, and I think it puts out the right spirit of Weirdo Music Forever. I think it's a good fit, so thanks for saying that.
I agree. Has anybody ever brought that up to you, just out of curiosity?
I've seen one or two comments where people have remarked on it, but yeah, it's not been something that someone specifically brought up to me in a conversation, so that's fun.
One of the things I find very interesting about the couple specific modern artists, modern day psychedelia or weirdo music or hypnagogic pop, is the emphasis on affected vocals and how that provides an aesthetic and it's a blending agent. You don't see that often in rock music. It's, you know, you have a ton of effects on every other instrument or whatever, but the vocals will be clean. You know, I was doing a garage band demo the other day, and I just hit some kind of phase button on the vocals, and it went from something that sounded really, really demo-y and kind of just, I mean, it still sounds demo-y, but just kind of shitty, all of a sudden something that really gels, you know? And I remember Tame Impala, who I am a fan of. They're like the first mainstream band that had this certain sound on their vocals, for me anyway. I was like, whoa, that guy, I don't know if he can sing, but I loved the aesthetic of the vocals. And Ariel and John Mouse do that a lot. And when you're talking about John Mouse's live shows, they come off exactly like the record, partially because of that. Have you noticed that? Any thoughts on that phenomenon, like affected vocals with some of this music, the modern version of some of this music that you're promoting?
It'd be tough to say. You know, I've had a conversation with, this is like touching on the whole sort of backdrop to something like Weirdo Music Forever. Can you talk about music? And of course there's that well-known Frank Zappa thing that I'll paraphrase about talking about music. It's like dancing about architecture. It's hard to talk about these things. And I don't operate under any illusion that I'm getting to the bottom of something or I'm explaining something to people. If I have a conversation with a musician, it's more just about reaching out, connecting, and maybe here and there finding a little tidbit that's interesting of, oh, did you know I record guitars like this? Or did you know that I use this piece of equipment? Those things could be something that could be inspiring or fun or interesting to someone. But I don't, to get to your question about the actual vocals, I haven't thought about it particularly in the sense that we're talking about now for something like Ariel and John Mouse and the vocal effects they use, other than to say that I am always drawn, whether it is a performance or a recording, to something that breaks up what I think I already know. That I think that's something that art is always trying to do. And if you look at, say, like, I think that in the 20th century, Duchamp, he was essentially a urinal in an art museum that was, I believe it was called something fountain or a water fountain.
Right.
Because what if you see something that you don't expect or hear something that you don't expect, or it's presented in a way that challenges your preconceived notion of something? And I think there could be something to what we're talking about with producing music that, whether that be live or on a record, that plays with that sense of, maybe I don't know what's coming next. Maybe I don't know what that is.
Do you do that?
It's just anything, hearing something and not saying, well, there could be a risk if everything's crystal clear and if everything is straightforward, that my brain and my heart turn off because I say, I know what this is. But so there was in the 20th century, there was, for instance, concrete music. Mm-hmm. And Pierre Schaeffer wrote his whole book. It was just translated into English for the first time a few years ago. And he talks about that because he was with all these turntables sampling music in something like the 1950s. He was a contemporary of John Cage. And he would record things like train tracks. And he said, if I record train tracks, the listener will immediately create a narrative. They'll say, well, that's train tracks. We all know what train tracks are. We all know what they sound like. So then they would start saying, well, train tracks must mean that this person is going here to meet this person and do this. And you kind of created a story because it was so familiar. So his idea was to take sound and have us come to the sound and approach it on its own merits, to say, well, what if I took train tracks and slowed it down and played them backwards? Now you're hearing a sound, but you're not relating it to your mundane everyday life where you have all these associations. It's just sound for sound's sake, in a sense. And I do think that any kind of, not speaking for any of the artists we're talking about, but something to be said for manipulating sound in such a way, whether live or on record, that gives us a new experience that it might have been inaccessible to us if not for that.
Okay, fair. Yeah, that's a great point. Now, musical concrete, does it speak to random nature of kind of inserting sounds here or there and then understanding that it makes perfect sense even if it was thrown in random? You know, why I say that, if I'm driving down the street, I'm listening to, this is kind of a breakthrough in my mind, but if I'm listening to anything and I hear a siren, my initial reaction is always like, you have heard this song before. I'm like, wow, that's great. I never heard that before. And it always sounds perfect, despite the fact it's just, you know, an ambulance or a cop coming by me, which led me to believe that things are much more flexible and you can just throw in anything at any old time and people's brains will kind of make sense out of it, you know?
Yeah, maybe. And then maybe somehow getting to, again, like, that's a great example, using a siren. That's a difficult one to use because you put a siren in the song and that signals something to us. You say, uh-oh, the sirens are not good. That does not mean something good. So how could you organize that or place it in a context or reform it so that it signaled something else to you? We have all these sounds that mean things. I always say that the needle being pulled across the LP means party's over. And there's even a lot of people that don't have that much experience with LPs, but they've seen enough TV shows, cartoons, movies, that now has become some kind of a trigger sound. You say, I know what that means. Or another great, you know, just classic example is a car alarm. That a car alarm to us means just about everything except my car is being stolen. I mean, the soccer ball hit it, a motorcycle that was really loud drove by, a runner accidentally brushed up against the car on the way past it. But rarely do we ever react to a car alarm in a sense that would indicate we believe that the car is being broken into.
Absolutely not. I usually just yell out, somebody shut that fucking thing up. You know, like,
right. We don't take it seriously. And so I think that with concrete music, there needs to be some intent. Otherwise, it's
okay.
Just nature. And I'm not an authority on the subject, but that's what I would say. There needs to be some kind of intent of organization and context and rearranging to make that which is found something that is now, however mysterious it may be, ordered and meaningful in a different way than just sitting outside and listening to the birds or the train go by or something like that, which is beautiful in its own sense, but according to my understanding, probably not concrete music.
Okay. I'll have to check out that book now. Who is the artist, or sorry, the author of that book?
Pierre Schaeffer.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I know there's an awesome tour coming up, Desert Caravan 2. Are you going to get to see any of those shows?
I am going to get to see at least one and in early May, at least. And yes, I'm really much looking forward to that. I know that Don Bowles will be in the band, and I know a couple other of the band members that will be in that group, and I'm looking forward to that lineup and hearing some of the same, but some different material from the past tour, and that should be a lot of fun.
Of course, in this tour, the one I'm going to see them in Dallas, which is going to be crazy. I'm just going to fly in, take an Uber, and then leave 7 the next morning. It's just insane, but I really want to see it. I think Dive is on the bill, and Ariel Pink, and that's, you obviously mentioned Don Bowles. Who else is on that bill? Is it the same the whole tour? Or?
So that one, the only confirmed artists at this point that I know of are Ariel Pink and Dive.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, is it? I saw them on this last tour in Philadelphia, Ariel Pink. Now, is going to be different band than it was on even then?
Some of the people, this is, yes. Yeah, so I know George Elbrecht is now in the band for this tour. I know Don Bowles is still on the tour. And then a few other people, like I think Kenny Gilmore is doing different projects. And there's a new keyboardist in the group. And so I think that there's some new faces in there. And it should be fun.
Should be super fun. Let's see. How do you see Weirdo Music Forever in the future? You're going to keep doing what you're doing? You ever think about maybe putting out some music? I know it's a couple different questions there, but what's in store?
Putting out music is I think it can go in any direction. That's a distinct possibility. I would love to always have kind of independence from the big powers. So it scares me if I see something like Amazon or Google locking down the internet or anything like that. You know,
a
book could be in the future, getting stuff online, getting stuff offline, getting stuff in people's hands, having stuff in the virtual world, you know, kind of spreading out the message and the info, having it available to people in different places and in different ways, not being too narrow in the scope. And that's a bigger version of what's already going on. I like that some people can just scroll through an Instagram feed and see a picture a day, and that's enough for them, and that's amazing. And I'm honored and thrilled that people are out there picking up on that. And then some people want to read an exhaustive 6, 7, 8 page interview with someone that's filled with info, and I love that. And I think that, you know, through additional, I think there's going to be more
photos and writing and music and all these things are distinct possibilities.
That's radical. I wanted to real quick throw out, and we talked about R.C.V. Moore, and if anybody out there listening wants to check him out, like just on one certain page, he has an unbelievable band camp that has, I don't know, man, hundreds of songs, maybe more, maybe thousands, I don't know, but I want to tell everybody to go check him out. He was very influential on a young Ariel Pink, and yeah, have you ever seen that dude live?
Yes, I have, and I'm glad because it's certainly not something that happens often. And believe it or not, he played at a Burger Records event
where
Gary Wilson played immediately before him. Then he played. The Garden was at that show. There was just like so many people, and yeah, that was a special show. He's making Southern California appearances for a while, but it's not really happening right now, unfortunately. But I wholeheartedly concur that everyone should check out R. Stevie Moore. He's just a treasure beyond words.
I got to see him with Chastity Belt. Are you familiar with Chastity Belt, the band?
I'm not. Is that a band I should check out?
I think so. I know he's a really big fan of Chastity Belt, and they opened for him. When I used to live in Seattle, and when he came to town, they're all female, kind of dark. They reminded me of Joy Division a little bit, actually, but that was just one particular song. They're great, for sure. They're on Hardy Art Records out of Seattle, which is like a subsidiary of Sub Pop, basically.
Cool. Yeah. I actually have a Gary Wilson poster, vintage, that was put up at a... It cost the promoter hundreds of dollars because he got signed. He was a DJ up in Seattle, and really cool poster. And Gary actually ended up using it for a later record cover.
Yeah.
It's kind of some interesting Gary Wilson lore there.
You have it?
I do. I have the poster, and I have the rare 45 that was. Where Gary took the artwork from that, just basically Xeroxed it and created a new cover for a 45.
Radical, man. Who is on your radar right now that I definitely wouldn't have heard of? Ariel Pink is quite obscure to a lot of people, not to mention the other figures, but who's coming up, man? Who's great? Who's great around there that you're really into and you're thinking about promoting that I wouldn't know?
Well, there's so much, and I definitely, yeah, there's just a ton, but I will say, besides the usual suspects, you know, which you know about and we've talked about,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, that just thrill me, I would say, as we've talked about, I'm definitely looking at what's coming up for Holy Shit. I'm definitely, this ventures to the fringes of the Weirdo Music Forever world, but, Enjoy, who's Wyatt Shears, The Garden, and Fletcher, who does Puzzle. I'm always interested in what they're up to and what Cowgirl Clue is up to. I think Sudan Archives on, Stone's Throw. And is doing interesting stuff. I recently did an interview with Stimulator Jones, who is so broad. I mean, it's wild how you hear one
he's
thing.
He's on Stone's Throw Records, right?
He is on Stone's Throw. His album's coming out soon. And the album is one thing, but then you start digging into the archives and there's other things. And, you know, it's a real, he's just such a diverse talent. Stone's Throw is also putting out only the second album ever. It's almost 35 years after the first that Prophet has done, which is really interesting.
Hmm.
So definitely going to be following those stories. There's a real under-the-radar thing called Holland Tunnel that I'm keeping an eye on. And Fancy Space People is getting busy again. somebody that I can talk about that if fans of Ariel Pink, if they're like hardcore, may know, or people that just have interesting things on their radar. Jack Name. I saw them.
I saw them open for Ariel. They were really good. Very interesting, man. Very minimal. Some on the, what the hell was it, two albums ago at Numo's in Seattle. Yeah, I really dug that.
Amazing. Yeah, Jack Name is such a talent and highly recommended. And then, gosh, there was one other one that I just thought of. Something that I really hope, I know he's working on a new album, and I hope it comes out soon, Danny James, because the last one, Pear, that came out on Burger Records, is, I just think, a mini masterpiece and just deserves all the attention it can get and then some. So I always tell people about Danny James Pear. I'm pretty upfront about Part-Time. I think that's always everything Part-Time does is good and worth checking out. So yeah, and as we mentioned, Charles, Let's Start a Family Tonight. I can't wait for that to come out. So
she's killer. And she sang in a couple of the dedicated to Bobby Jameson tracks, and she makes those tracks. They're awesome.
Yes. And co-wrote them too. So
she co-wrote them, right?
Yes. Yeah. Very, very talented. So yeah, that's, I'm sure as soon as we hang up the phone, there'll be five other things I'll think about, but that's okay.
That's awesome. Yeah, I came across a couple names that you didn't mention in my preparation for this talk. A Night Jewel. I mean, actually mentioned her earlier.
Absolutely.
She's rad, right?
She's same thing. She's just so. I definitely recommend digging into the archives of Night Jewel, and there's been such a trajectory. In her music, and anything that people can get their hands on, whether that be music or an interview, or she's even recently done what you might call a lecture in the university setting. It's and she's on the new, on that album on Stone's Throw, Prophet. She's on a track that is highly recommended. I think there's going to be a video coming out for that. Saw Night Jewel on tour with Geneva Jacuzzi and Harriet Brown last year, and
Geneva puts on a hell of a show, man.
She does. All her shows are great, and that also jogs my memory. Sloppy Jane, because they did a show recently, and Sloppy Jane is just—I just think they're unstoppable. Haley Dahl and Sloppy Jane—I just see them going as far as Haley wants it to go. I think that's there's really kind of no one like Sloppy Jane, and
Sloppy
so
Jane, right?
Such a hardworking band, and it's paying off clearly. So lots of interesting things that I think is going to be coming down the pipeline for them as well.
I drove the whole way to Cleveland from here. But it's about 2 hours, not that long, I guess, maybe 2.5 hours to see Geneva Jacuzzi.
Yeah.
And she was unbelievable. Had an air generator, a fan on stage, and blew up this plastic ball around her. And people were totally just intoxicated with it, you know?
Yeah, it's so cool. And the Secret Demos Volume 2 is great. And her video work's great. And, yeah, there's so much. There's this new group called Common, C-M-O-N, that's really good. Shags Chamberlain has been producing stuff, and that sounds amazing. And gosh, there was one or two more that there's too much to keep track of, but it's a great problem to have.
I ran across a guy named Tim Burgess, and I guess he was in the Charlatans UK, and now he is doing his own solo. He was a singer for them, and now he's doing more of a solo deal, I guess, and he gets to open for Ariel Pink in London at Heaven on August 14th and Gorilla in Manchester on August 15th. He owns, what label does he own? O Genesis.
Mm-hmm. And he still does the Charlatans. They're coming out with an EP this year.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And, he is total Renaissance man. He runs O Genesis. He does the Charlatans. He has this solo album, which came out and is totally amazing. It's
There's a track with Debbie Gooch from My Bloody Valentine, track Lady Hawk, just the songs, Nick Void. The songs are amazing. It's a whole album that sounds good. Different styles, but it's still cohesive. He has a coffee company, a nonprofit, Tim Peake's Coffee, and he has that at festivals. And he's a very, very important, just like Ariel Pink, very important curator and champion of the music. And like someone I didn't mention, but blows my mind, Dent May. He's played Dent May on BBC Radio. He recently played Sudan Archives on BBC. He plays Ariel Pink through the radio stuff, through his own DJ stuff. And then he's an author. He's written two books and he's working on a third. And he lived in LA for something like 13 years. So that figures into everything he does. And he was very much a part of the scene, still very connected to it. And it's nice that he mentioned very important people like Jason Faulkner and Ariel, and he's put out R. Stevie Moore's music. Mm-hmm. There's even still a rumored Christmas song of Ariel Pink, R. Stevie Moore, and Tim Burgess in the works. So it's a fascinating connection to the other side of the pond with all this music.
It's all about the multiple revenue streams, I guess, in this day and age, if you're doing it yourself, you know?
Yeah, and different platforms, again, like there's just different ways to make these things happen. There's a different scope of the projects, and some people might want to read, some people might want to listen to the radio, some people might want to see a live show. And I just think there's a selflessness to some of these people where they know that they have the ability to bring something into a larger forum that is deserving of that. And so I think I'm so thankful that someone like Tim Burgess is out there doing what he's doing.
In this day and age, you know, people often lament that, you know, artists can't make any money anymore off their music because, you know, this or that because of downloading. But that possibly is true, but I believe that small-time artists, you know, if they can get a dedicated following and with the ability of the internet that's worldwide, and you find pockets throughout the world, you can actually make a living. You know, I was talking to this podcaster, and when he started, he didn't want 100,000 fans, right, people that listen to his podcast. He wanted 1,000 people who are willing to spend $100 per year, you know, and that seemed manageable. So, I mean, it's kind of an amazing world. You know, you talked about, I don't know, Weirdo Music Collector Forever. I mean, that could be huge in Stockholm, in Australia. I mean, it probably is, you know. It's an interesting world we live in, anyway.
It sure is. Yeah. It's definitely, it's fractured, and there's things that seem better, there's things that seem worse. But, yeah, I absolutely agree. It's still a way to get stuff out there. And, I'm hopeful that through all these different platforms that people continue doing what they're doing. And really, back to your, maybe this is a good place to end, it's the, yeah, you know, getting back to your question about philosophy, that's what it is. I think about, I catch myself or someone else getting caught in a cycle of talking about what TV shows or what news or what award ceremony or new release is bothersome to them, what they don't like, what's bringing them down, what they disagree with, and thinking we all have the means, or many of us have the means, if we're lucky enough, to get the message out there about the things that we want to, that we can say, we could self-publish a book, we could put music up on Bandcamp, we can put a video up on YouTube, and these things can, you know, I'd way rather have, like you say, 1,000 people, I'd way rather have 1,000 people be passionate,
yeah, right,
passionately engaged with something that I think is important, than have 100,000 passive consumers of it. And I think that's the beauty of where we are. We don't have to, whether it's Weirdo Music Forever or any number of things that are interesting, because of course we all have to have some kind of parameters on what we're doing. I can't write about everything. Nobody can share everything they like. So I'm glad to see the same, to read someone else's blog or book about something that I'm not able to cover, or because I'm not qualified, or I don't have the time, or whatever it is. And these small worlds can suddenly be shared and explored in a new and important way.
I totally agree. Okay, man. So this is it. Where do people go to get into Weirdo Music I want to call it Weirdo Music Collective. It's Weirdo Music Forever. Hmm. And thus, this beautiful world, this expansive, interesting, intelligent world of music and art we're talking about, where do they go for that?
Well, if they go to just all one word, weirdomusicforever.com, that's the hub. That'll direct you to everything, to Instagram, to Twitter. You can write via email. A lot of people send music in, and I love that they do. I'm so swamped, I'm rarely able to respond to those, but I do save them. I do have them. But weirdomusicforever.com, or just look up Weirdo Music Forever on Instagram. It's all connected. That's two of the best starting points, probably.
Perfect, man. I want to thank you for taking this call. You're very important to this movement, and the movement is very important. Any parting words before we go?
No, I really appreciate your interest in all the artists that we got to talk about today, and a million that didn't get to, but we'll have another talk sometime soon. And there's so many. So I just thought of Jimmy Whispers. He's another one. There's so many out there that I'd love to talk about, and I appreciate the time and the interest, and to be continued.
All right, buddy. That sounds amazing. You've been on the Shit Show with J-Bo, and we'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot. Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
Okay.